to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim
Podcast. I'm excited for this episode because we're going to my alma mater.
And we're 50. This is a really cool episode.
You know, I keep telling people that we've been around for almost 5 years, and everyone's like, what?
We've been around for 50 years.
50 years. It's funny when I talk to other podcasters because they're like, oh, it's we're on year one and we're on like our 50th episode. I was like, thank God we do a monthly podcast.
Can we hear about your like string of like podcast hops?
Yeah.
That you got going on?
Yeah. I hope I got some listeners from this, but I was on the Ethnically Ambiguous podcast with Anna Hosni.
We love them.
So good. It was such a fun episode. We like bonded immediately. We talked about our dads. It was really good. And then I was also on B. Biman's podcast, Peace of Mind. He's the South Asian musician. He's actually Sri Lankan. And what he's been doing is he's been releasing this music album as a podcast. So each song is a podcast. And I was part of his episode where he talks about the song about voting. And that was a ton of fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So he has an album of songs and then he discusses them with a guest.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
That's rad.
It was a lot of fun. I'm a huge fan of his because I used to write about him on CPM Mutiny and on my music blog back in the day. So it was kind of cool to meet him in person.
Yeah, I saw your fangirling on social media.
Totally fangirling. And then I'm on another podcast, which isn't out yet, but hopefully it will come out, the Bollywood Boys podcast, because I was watching this TV show on Amazon Prime called Four More Shots, Please. And ooh. I was so excited about it because it was like a South Asian Sex in the City. And I was like, you have to have me on your podcast so I can talk about this. And then I went on and it was a lot of fun because one of their podcasters actually hated the series. So then it got all heated. So listen to that one, too. I had a lot of fun on podcasts. Invite me to your podcast. I like talking.
Yeah. What the hell, man?
Yeah.
But I am still salty that I've never been a guest on the Sporkful podcast.
Oh, my gosh. You should go. I went to a live show for the Sporkful this week. And he had Danny Trejo on it.
I saw that.
It was so cool.
I'm salty.
It was so good.
And yours also came with food.
Yeah, I was excited about that.
Man.
I was really hoping the Sporkful podcast was going to have the donuts this week, but we had the empanadas instead.
Yum.
Danny's empanadas.
Hit me up.
And have us at the Danny Trejo taco shop to do a show.
Yay. Joining podcasts. Meeting new folks.
Yeah. Have us on your show. We like talking. And Valentine's Day happened.
Okay, you had some exciting Valentine's Day news.
I had not very exciting news because I didn't get flowers or chocolates. I didn't have a Valentine.
Oh, you guys, I'm a bad podcast host.
I spent my time at the post office, though, mailing Valentine's Day cards. I had my 7th season of the Muslim V-Day cards. They were a lot of fun, but...
You guys, my Shia self-flagellating tendencies are kicking in right now. Because that's Galentine's. I should have been sending you
flowers.
Yeah,
girl. No one Galentined me.
Oh, shit.
You know what I did do? I sent a set of cards to Amy Poehler for Galentine's. And, you know, Amy Poehler is Galentine's, so I felt good about that. And, you know, by the time Valentine's Day rolls around, I actually do get kind of sad because I spend a lot of time focused on love without getting any love.
Oh.
It's very like a little bit kind of like I get a little emo. And then when I was emo this on Valentine's Day morning, I was scrolling through my social media feed and then I saw photos of my card in Congress because there was a group of Muslim women in D.C. They were delivering cards to our congresswoman, Rashida and Ilhan. I'm just going to be on like first name basis with her congresswoman.
Oh my God.
Which was really cool. I mean, like it was great to have like Muslim organizer friends. I didn't know they were doing this. And they were in Congress. If you follow the hashtag support Muslim women and hashtag show your love for Ilhan and Rashida, they were basically depositing these cards in Congress because our Muslim women are getting a lot of hate in Congress. Ilhan said a comment about AIPAC, about how AIPAC is an Israeli lobby. Which is fact.
Yeah, tell me, what is AIPAC? Like, give me a little context
like
here.
American Israel lobby. It's basically AI, and the AIPAC is an American Israel, whatever. It's a lobbying force.
Yeah.
And we've always known that AIPAC is a lobbying force. It's always been there. But because Ilhan had said that AIPAC was a lobbying organization, just her in stating this fact, like, all of a sudden she was being attacked as an anti-Semite. She was being attacked as anti-Jewish. It was terrible. She had this entire machine behind her. So, you know, people were showing love by using these hashtags and going to their office.
Wow. Okay. So just for stating the fact that they're a lobbying force, that's it. That's all it took.
AIPAC is very powerful in D.C., so no one wants to do anything wrong. The funny thing is that now that we have white supremacists in D.C. in office, all of a sudden these people that are super anti-Jewish, because of the statement, were allying with AIPAC because they're more Islamophobic than they are like...
This is so bizarre.
It's so ridiculous.
The like Zionist and Nazi...
Alliance?
Yeah, what in the world?
To combat Islamophobia?
What in the world?
I know. It's so bad.
I mean, it's bad. It's disrespectful. It's
mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, I've been reading up on a lot of this stuff this past month because there was a lot out there. You know, for me, it was just like, everyone was like, show your support for Ilhan, show your support for Rashida. And for me, I was just like, I don't even... Like, of course I support them. This is just a stupid thing to talk about because obviously there is this media machine that's propelling all these hate Twitter accounts and fake news media to kind of push for this to happen. So I just didn't want to give that any credit. But I am very happy that my cards were being used to show them love.
Yeah. So what was the picture? What did the picture look like?
It was just like it showed a picture of like all the organizers. So these women in D.C., part of the Justice for Muslims Collective organization, they had gone to the doors of these congresswomen and they had my cards and they had written on the back of it. They had all signed it saying, like, we love you. And then they shared it. And I was like, oh, that feels so good. Like, I didn't know they were going to do that. I didn't know that's what my cards were being used for.
That is so cool.
It was really cool. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib tweeted a picture of the card, which was that I'd never Muslim ban you from my heart.
Aww. And she tweeted it.
She tweeted it. And she said, got this amazing card in my office today. Happy Valentine's Day. And it got 4,358 likes, which is kind of cool. I did not make that many sales.
Wow.
So it would have been nice if the likes correlated with my sales increase.
Come on, people. Come on, people. It's Etsy.
But what was really interesting was how much hate I got.
Whoa.
Because I was CC'd in that tweet and because she's just being attacked left and right by the Islamophobes. I spent a big chunk of my Valentine's Day blocking trolls.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I know.
This is like how classic... brown Muslim single woman organizer in politics Valentine's can you get it's like all right all the things
all the things
mailing Valentine's for other folks and getting trolled all right we need to get Tess some flowers and candy
and a husband
while
we're at it I'm just saying
get on top of that
So that was my Valentine's Day. I'm excited to put Valentine's Day behind me until next year. It does get very emotional. Like, it gets tough. I mean, if I'm blocking trolls on Valentine's Day, like, come on. That's not how you spread love.
This, like, if anything, encapsulates being a Muslim woman organizer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's like spreading love, receiving hate. I love and appreciate you, Tess.
Thanks.
That's not enough, but.
I take chocolates, too.
I'm on it.
Well, I love and appreciate you too.
Thank you. So my Valentine's was already uneventful.
Yeah.
But paired with yours, it's like significantly uneventful.
What happened?
Okay, my Valentine's Day consisted of this text exchange with my husband. Hey, so Tiffany's husband Dylan is alone on Valentine's Day because she's at a bachelorette party. And then Duncan wrote back, oh, sweet. Do you want to invite him over for dinner so he could put up wall shelves for us?
Oh, my goodness.
And I wrote back, exactly. I love you.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
And you got wall shelves while you were at it.
It was pretty great. Yeah, we kept him company. We all got cupcakes and got some wall shelves.
And he was your third wheel.
I mean, basically, we were two third wheels together.
Oh, like, I see.
He did not want to be spending his Valentine's Day putting up wall shelves for another couple.
Right. Wait, so there was someone else?
Yes, my friend Tiffany.
Oh, okay.
She's my new doggy best friend.
Got it.
Our doggies are best friends and we're best friends.
Uh-huh.
And she was away on a bachelorette party and her husband Dylan was home alone.
Wait, so then it was just Dylan that came over, or both Tiffany and Dylan?
No, just Dylan.
So he was the third wheel.
No, what I'm trying to tell you is usually the third wheel is the person who shouldn't be there.
Right.
But is there. In this instance, going by that equation, technically, Duncan and I together are the third wheel.
That works. This logic does not work.
My people invented math.
The third wheel is the third person of a couple.
If you're going to go by standard logic.
Yeah, I'm good. Obviously, I'm going to go. Did you get flowers or chocolate?
No, the only thing that I got. Well, okay, that's not fair. That's not fair to Duncan. He left for CVS because I said, hey, Duncan, why don't you score us some LaCroix?
Uh-huh.
And then he came back with a rose.
Oh.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
Dylan bought us cupcakes.
Oh, your third wheel bought you cupcakes for Valentine's Day. Cute.
And he put up some shelves for us.
That's how every sidekick of a relationship should be.
You know what else is really weird about this whole thing? On stage, there was like 1 year where I was trying to not use Duncan's name.
Yeah.
And I pseudonymed him.
I thought you still were.
No. Yeah. With Google. What's the point, man? And his pseudonym was Dylan.
I remember this. Yeah.
So it was so trippy. Every time she's like, oh, yeah, Dylan. I'm like, what?
You're like my husband, Dylan.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, not my husband, Dylan.
Like, I always giggle a little bit because it's like my pseudonym for my white boy. But he's just a different white boy. Anyway, what's up, Dylan? Thank you. You read. I've also been getting a lot of favors. People have been extra nice to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. But this thing that's going on with my thyroid.
Yeah, which you talked about in the last episode, and everyone's been emailing about it. Thank you for all the emails.
Thank you for all the emails. Also, it's been amazing to hear from so many people who have had issues with their thyroids, ranging from like hypothyroidism to Hashimoto's to thyroid cancer, like writing about their experiences. It's just so helpful to, you know, be able
to. And for
to,
me,
like,
I'm actually, I find it really sad and shocking that there are so many stories out there. Like, what is happening in our environment that thyroids are getting so inflamed in this society?
Man, all of 2016, I felt like I was just like my throat was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Every day it was just like heartbreak, destruction. 2016,
sure.
2017, 2018, that's stress.
So what's the update for our listeners?
So here's what I have in the latest. And I don't have anything definitive for y'all yet. And part of the reason I talked about this in the last episode a little bit, but just to reiterate, part of the reason why I'm sharing things, even though I don't have definitive information, is because I think it's important for people to sort of normalize this experience of the process of ruling out and living in the space of uncertainty. Also, when I mentioned to my doctor that that's what I mentioned on the podcast, he said that that was a very important point. And I just want to put that out there, that my doctor is impressed by me. So my test came back positive for mutation,
mm-hmm.
which would mean cancer. But, a big but, I'm likely in like a stage 0 or 1 where they can cut it out and we can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And
so no chemo if you cut it out.
I don't think. Yeah. And I mean, it depends. There are so many different kinds and so many different treatment processes. With my kind, I believe that the process would be radiation. Nuclear uranium.
Oh, my goodness. This is like a new segment.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm already picturing it.
Can't be as good as my soccer segment, though. What'd you guys all think of that? So, there'll be surgery in March.
Mm-hmm.
Send me well wishes. Send our podcast donations to keep us going so I can have an assistant also to fill in for me and all of our back end work. Like, everybody's just been sending me so much love. On Instagram is where I really like share my posts about my health and my process. That's where you can find me, Zahra Comedy, Z-A-H-R-A Comedy. And I love hearing everybody's stories. And, you know, I think community positivity is so important. And I've seen it be such a factor in my friends' lives when they're going through these things.
And you have something else that's happening. So this is bad timing. I mean, being sick is always bad timing, but you have a really important show coming up.
Oh, my God. I have my comedy special debut that is being filmed in its world premiere performance June 21st and June 22nd at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. It's called On Behalf of All Muslims, a comedy special by Zara Norbakhsh. And it is about how in my 15-year span of performance, I'm always asked, no matter what, to speak on behalf of all Muslims or to not speak on behalf of all Muslims, on behalf of all Muslims. And I was inescapable. And I get to develop this comedy show in a theater, never at a bar.
Yeah.
This content has not been developed at a bar. It's brand new material. It's my debut world premiere.
And what do you want people to do?
Come from all stretches and parts of the earth.
Can people buy tickets now?
Yes, you can buy tickets now at the Golden Thread website, GoldenThreadProductions.com, or you can go to my website, ZaraComedian.com.
So if you're feeling sad about Zara having cancer, go and buy a ticket now and show your support.
Yes, I need 600 people in the last weekend of June. June 21st and 22nd. Do you know how hard it is to get folks to not leave town?
Is there a way for people to contribute if they can't make it to the show, like if they're in a different part of the country?
Yes, they can. You can go to my website. You can contribute on my website to keep the show funded. You can also encourage all of your friends in San Francisco and the San Francisco Bay Area to come. Push, push, push them. People in the Bay Area don't like to go out, so you have to start early.
Yeah. So this is going to be exciting.
I'm really excited for this. This show. I'm not excited about my surgery in March.
No.
But I am excited about my show.
I think it's a good thing to have after something really traumatic, to have something to look forward to.
I agree.
I feel like this is it. You know, you and I are also going to be doing some shows coming up.
We have hella touring going on.
Yeah, I think the next two shows are going to be live shows, including this one. The second half of the show is a live show. We're going next week
to
Yale.
Yale!
So if you're in Yale, come by.
What up, Yaleys?
Our show is March 4th at Yale.
Is this the land of Brett Kavanaugh?
I don't know.
Yale?
I don't want to disparage Yale before we go to Yale.
It is. Whoa.
But he's not going to be there. He's not going to be there.
Well,
and there's going to be a lot of cool people there.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
But okay, so here's
Well, actually, if you are at Yale, please, or in the vicinity, please come, because we want all of the cool people in the audience.
Or if you're in New York,
please come.
You're close.
Close enough.
Yeah. Come. Come see the show.
And in April, we're going to Toronto. You're going to be doing a live show. You're going to be doing two live comedy sets, and we're going to be doing a live Good Muslim, Bad Muslim there. So come through Toronto.
I'm so excited to meet the alt Muslim crowd of Toronto and Montreal.
It's be
close,
fun.
Close enough. And the Persian crowd of Toronto. I'm super stoked for that.
Yeah, the Persian crowd of all the places is going to be fun. Do we get to do Nowruz at Yale? Can we do something?
Nowruz.
Nowruz.
Oh, nice. That's good.
Nowruz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What day is it, Yale? No, because Nowruz is the 21st.
Ugh.
I know.
But it's so close.
I know.
We won't get to do it.
But we'll get to do fire jumping.
I just wanted to do fire jumping at some point.
In LA. We'll get to do fire jumping in LA.
Okay, done.
Yeah.
Sweet. Done. We're fire jumping.
Yeah.
I love fire.
Oh, my God.
Fire's so exciting.
It is. It is.
Something even more to celebrate right now is Black History Month.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once a year, Black History
Once a
Month.
Year.
Even though it is the history of this country.
There's been so much stuff happening in the news, but I really just wanted to highlight it. I've been feeling the being a non-Black Muslim thing, and I think it's important as our podcast, as two women who aren't Black and Muslim, that we make sure that we highlight this narrative, because I want to highlight the work of Black Muslims on our show.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a big shift in the activist rhetoric around Muslimness that used to be very focused on the foreign experience of being Muslim and the immigrant experience of being Muslim.
Yeah.
That in the just like I think in the last year has like shifted dramatically.
Totally has shifted.
To actually visibilize the Black Muslim narrative that is so much a part of the American Muslim narrative.
Yeah. I would say for people who are looking to learn more about this narrative, I just watched a really cool film by a woman who was in the book Love Inshallah with me and Zara. Her name is Najla, and the movie is called Jinn.
Yes!
J-I-N-N. And I watched it because it was on Amazon Prime. So if you have Amazon Prime, it is up there, and it's a lovely movie about this young Black dancer woman whose mom converts to Islam, and then she herself learns to explore Islam. And it's just such a real narrative. I'm so proud of Najla. She did a great job.
Congratulations, Najla. And it is my Friday night date night movie.
Yeah, it's so good. For other places to get some information, the Identity Politics podcast. Our friends Mecca and Ikhlas are over there.
What's up?
They're so good. Their podcast keeps getting better and better. Listen to them.
They've been on NPR a couple times.
Yeah, they're so fun. They're great. And finally, one more thing is if you want to learn more, there's an organization called Muslim Arc, the anti-racist collective, I believe, Muslim Arc. You can follow them on Twitter. They've been around. They just had their 5-year anniversary. They are a great resource on not just the Muslim Black experience, but like how to push for anti-racism within the Muslim community.
You can go to Muslim Arc. That's ARC at the end there, .org. On their website, it says our mission is to provide racial justice, education, and resources to advance racial justice. Yes.
So go do something to celebrate this month.
Yeah, don't just retweet stuff.
Don't retweet stuff.
And like stuff on Facebook.
Go to events. Read a book. Listen to a podcast. Watch a movie. There's so much out there. Do something.
All right. So it's interesting to me that in our 50th anniversary episode, Tess, we're about to have the same kind of conversation.
Yeah, we're talking about ISIS again. Again.
Wow. ISIS is back.
ISIS is back.
What's up? This time, ISIS's job is to eliminate due process in the United States. That was my takeaway from the podcast episode we're about to talk about in this segment of the episode.
Yeah, we were listening to the Daily Podcast today, which is the New York Times Daily Podcast. And they were talking both in the New York Times, there's an article, as well as in the podcast, there's this produced story about what's happening over there in ISIS territory, which is rapidly shrinking. Now that it's rapidly shrinking, there are terrorists that are leaving the terrorist organization. And now we have a problem of what do we do with the terrorists who don't want to be terrorists anymore? So there's that problem. And so what...
That's the weirdest sentence I've ever heard, by the way. Like, that is their sentence, but it is so fucking weird.
It is so weird, right? So I think thinking about it in this, like, public policy kind of a way, it's like, well, you can jail everyone or you can repatriate everyone. I don't know. So it's, like, a very complicated...
Isn't it interesting how we're now in this binary situation of either more people in prison, fill the prisons, or it's about some form of genuine American indoctrination that supposedly exists. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. I'm just finding it really fascinating. Our segue into this McCarthy witch hunt era that usually, when it's racialized, leads to genocide. Mm-hmm. That's how it went in Germany.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just watching it play out.
What I thought was interesting about this story and the podcast today was how they framed it with this gender lens. So they both interviewed women who are trying to leave, and they both interviewed American women.
Yeah, give our listeners a little bit of context before I jump in with all of my.
So the story is about American women who were here in the U.S. who went to Syria to jump into ISIS.
And the way it's framed is both of them are trying to rebel against their families in some way. By one converts to Islam as a white woman with this like strange Canadian / U.S. / something else citizenship that was sort of ambiguous. And then the other was an American Muslim woman who was rebelling.
Yeah, but she was American Muslim who was the daughter of a Yemeni diplomat.
And she was rebelling by joining ISIS.
Yeah, because in her narrative, how they constructed it, they were saying because she was raised in such a strict Muslim household that the only way for her to find freedom was to throw herself into her spirituality, which is
interesting. It's interesting.
Wrought with problems.
Yeah, so one went Muslim and one went to Muslim.
Yeah.
Got it.
Right. And then so they basically go over there. And as soon as they land, they're kind of put in this dormitory situation. They're not really allowed to leave the dorm, which is housing all these single women, without getting married. One of the women end up getting married to 3 different men that end up dying. To me, it kind of reads like a brothel, right? Like the sanctified brothel. Or...
Like the when you listen to the episode, and you don't have to listen to the episode because we're recapping it for you here so that you don't have to give this episode hits. You can give us hits. When you hear them talk, like when Rukmini Kelamachi covers this piece, she's the contributing reporter, there's so much like Orientalist fervor. Mm-hmm. that almost, if I was going to describe it, I would say like delicious intrigue.
Yeah, I think it is intriguing, the story.
And of course, like as a writer, for me, I know so many times, like if I want to make sure that the focus of a story isn't this other thing that is highly problematic, you know, I have to do all this work to craft it so that I get across the message that's relevant.
Yeah. So what was the message you got and what did you not like about it?
The message that I got was this like salacious interview of these two women who were indoctrinated and how easily they were indoctrinated.
Yeah.
And how much it destroyed their lives and how their parents didn't expect that. And it was all framed around Muslimness and less ISIS. And there was a lot of like the facts were not relevant. Like there was so much that she could not fact check. Okay, sure. And what was relevant was like, well, is it right for these women who are coming back now after these experiences to really benefit off of our freedoms as Americans?
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? That's all I have to say to that. That's my review.
But what do you mean by your what the fuck? Because like I feel like my what the fuck is a little bit different than your what the fuck. Because my what the fuck is, because I think it's a complicated situation. But I think my biggest takeaway when I got to the end was that like they know what to do with the men. They know how to, like, they have this clip of President Trump telling the European nations to accept the men to come back to their country because for them it's easier to clean up the ISIS situation in the Mideast by having all the expats return to the country that they came from. So, you know, Trump is telling the European countries to do this, which I think is really weird, but also interesting. And I think what was clear to me was that the women didn't have as many rights or policies or laws to have their back in a way that men do.
Yeah.
And I think that was what struck me because I think, I don't know, I do feel like they were kind of trafficked in some ways. Like
they were absolutely trafficked.
But like also they did go over there. There's documented tweets and documented social media of them saying they're going over there to the fight on behalf of ISIS.
This is already a template that exists to discuss these kinds of issues, which
For
is
sure.
which is women who fall victim to cults.
Yeah.
This is not new.
Mm-hmm.
Cults have existed. They exist. They continue to exist. And there is a way to write about them journalistically that doesn't do the job of sensationalizing horrors that women are going through and invalidating them by that sensationalism.
You felt like they were invalidated?
Absolutely, because it was turned into a drama. Oh. I was listening to these accounts of two women that were being turned into entertainment and fear-mongering and anti-immigrant rhetoric. And on top of that, to like top it all off, one of their takeaways that they really nailed down, Michael Barbaro mentions this several times, is this issue, what do we do with this issue where due process is getting in the way of our being able to keep our country safe.
Mm.
So chuck it, right? That's the subtext.
Yeah.
And I hear Fox News do it regularly. You know, oh, if only ICE could act on suspicion.
Yeah. When I heard it, I was also kind of thinking, obviously, I had a grain of doubt in my head. It's like, how much of their story is being manufactured because they're talking to this reporter in a detention center?
Isn't it nifty that none of it can be fact checked?
Yeah.
There's also a way to discuss stories like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, This American Life has done many, many stories that have been excellent on the challenges of telling a tale where you really can't fact check it and all the different nuanced ways that they go about discussing
yeah.
it. You would think that with such a charged topic in such a time where the Muslim people are what's the percentage of hate crimes that have gone up? Is it like 100%?
No, it's not 100%.
The number of hate crime, Islamophobia is on the rise. Hate crimes are on the rise.
Yeah,
we have
yeah.
anti-immigrant rhetoric on the rise. You would think that it would be relevant, right? To the stakes of a population, to the health of a nation, dealing with fear-mongering, that two reporters would come at this from a point of view that is not salacious, pointless journalism that is wholly irresponsible and borders propaganda.
Wow. Those are big statements. I didn't think it was that bad.
It was bad.
I thought it was like a good presenting of an interview.
Nope.
I found it a really fascinating conversation, but I also took it, like I took what the reporter said with a grain of salt, and I was more interested in like what the girls were saying for themselves.
Here's what I'm going to say about that. No interview like that should come across as fascinating.
Really?
Nope. It should not come across as fascinating. Fascinating is a word you use with things that are entertaining, exotic, and interesting. It should come across as, you know, maybe mind-blowing, maybe, you
mind
know.
Mind-blowing, fascinating are the same thing to me.
No, but my point is this. Like, there's a nuance to it, right? Like, it shouldn't be like, whoa, wow, oh, my God. It should be more like, oh, this is how it went down. Oh, and then this was the process. Because, I'll tell you why. Because when people go into the space of awe and wonder, it starts to venture into that territory of, like, dramatized. How do I explain this?
I mean, I find public policy to be fascinating. So I think we're also coming at it from two different backgrounds, right? Like, I do politics for a living, and I find it fascinating. I don't do it because I think it's entertaining. I don't find Trump entertaining, but I find, like, it fascinating that we have a society that's driven by fake news, and we have a president in office that gets to lie 100 times a day and how that gets manipulated. You know, like, that's fascinating to me.
Interesting. Actually, fascinating.
Fascinating. And on that note, let's throw it to ourselves.
For our 50th episode, we are time traveling, you guys.
We're time traveling back and then forth.
Yeah, we're going to the Trojans.
USC Trojans, my alma mater.
Not the condom. And we are... Go Bears. We performed live. We did our segments, Creeping Sharia, our fatwas, and our Good Muslim Awards. And you get to hear the Trojans singing some Creeping Sharia.
So when we come back from our break, this is what you're going to hear.
Yeah, enjoy.
But we're still here, and we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? Tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turns gallery institution Giant Robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, Boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at AsianAmericana.com or on your podcast app.
And we're getting tired of proving we belong.
Welcome to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. We have a live studio audience. We are at USC. We're so excited to be here, my alma mater.
Listen to them. They're gorgeous.
This building's also gorgeous. This is wild.
All right, we got 10 minutes. We're going to dive into it. We've got our segments.
Yes. So who knows what a fatwa is? We see some hands.
We're going to issue a few.
We're going to issue one today. Do you want to explain what a fatwa is?
No, I just want to do it.
Okay. My fatwa is against the Muslim ban. We are now 2 years into the Muslim ban. I don't know why we're still doing this. I do, because we have a terrible president who keeps putting it on the docket. But I'm bringing it up now because it's in the news again. Judy Chu and Representative, who was the other representative?
Chris Murphy
have proposed legislation that's going to defund the Muslim ban from happening, which is great because it's, even though the Muslim ban keeps being pushed, this is another way of getting rid of it. So I am fatwa-ing the Muslim ban.
Okay, A, I did not know that the Muslim ban was still around.
Still around.
I didn't know that. And I didn't know that now, like, number one, thank God Congress is doing stuff.
Yeah, because we had a great election.
I'm really glad that Congress is doing stuff again. You guys may not know this, but a fatwa doesn't have to necessarily be negative. A fatwa is just really an amendment that is dependent upon your platform, which is why perhaps nobody has listened to my fatwa about not peeing on toilet seats.
Right.
It's
a good fatwa.
Need to expand my platform. But
so listen to previous episodes to hear more about that.
It's important. But positive fatwa, Congress is doing stuff again.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. And thank you, Judy Chu. She's a local Southern California representative.
27th District, California. Okay, just me.
Do you have a fatwa?
I gave my fatwa. That was my positive fatwa.
Positive fatwa.
Should we jump into our Good Muslim awards?
Yeah, who do you have a Good Muslim award to give to?
Okay, so my Good Muslim award goes to comedian, Libyan, and Muslimish, Mohamed El-Sheikhi. I'm Persianifying his name a little bit. It was really hard for me to research this.
Yeah.
It scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, I was following it on Twitter, I think this last week. He was on a bus going from Seattle to Portland, a Greyhound bus.
He was going from Portland to Spokane.
And ICE got on board. ICE has been going on board of Greyhound buses for the past couple years.
And it turns out that it actually may have been Border Patrol presenting themselves as ICE.
ICE has been lying like crazy. They are lying about starting up a school to entrap undocumented people. They've been lying about something else that was in the news this week. It's like hard to keep track. Oh, I have an immigration lawyer friend who said that undocumented people are getting letters to show up to ICE when they're not actually needed there. Like, ICE is just lying, 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 lying.
Which is interesting because that's what they accused him of doing when he presented his papers that they demanded to see.
Also, he's not at the border. He's in Portland and Spokane, which is not near the border.
I mean, no, and they've been harassing people on buses in between cities.
Yeah.
They in one of the news articles that I read that was doing a follow-up, they contacted Border Patrol Officer Bill Kingsford to respond.
What did he say?
We will look into this matter and be able to comment at a later time. However, it is important to remember that as per 8 U.S.C. 1304, parenthetical E, close parenthetical, all immigrants 18 years of age and over are required by law to carry documents showing they are in the country legally.
Which he was
he
doing.
Did.
Yeah.
Three times he was asked, three times he presented three different types of documents, and they just accused him of lying.
Liars.
I mean, this is terrifying to me, and it's amazing. He now is, it looks like he's going to have a show.
Well, we should all support it now.
Yeah, it's called Unprotected Sets. What's up, Unprotected Sets? And yeah, I mean, I applaud also that, you know, he was on Twitter talking about his experience. A lot of people offered him money, and he sent them to go support the ACLU with that funding.
That's awesome. It's a good Muslim award there.
All right. For our next segment, I'm going to need support from you guys. We have kind of a tradition. We tour colleges all over the country, and this is my favorite segment to do. It's our Creeping Sharia segment. It's about all the ways we're winning. And we're going to see, Minnesota was like pretty bomb.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
They had a pretty amazing Creeping Sharia choir going. Let's see if we can get it from all of you, okay? You're going to repeat after me. We're going to go, Creeping Sharia. And when I make a fist, we're going to close out. Ready? One, two, three.
Creeping Sharia.
That was
rad.
So pretty.
Look at you, Trojans.
Fox News is going to be so scared.
We just Trojaned with a Creeping Sharia.
Yeah, we did.
Do you see what I did there?
Zara's a comedian.
Do you see what I did there? All right, what you got for Creeping Sharia?
Okay, so this past week, Trump has been talking about prayer rugs at the border, right? I don't have the link available, but he said...
Okay, also, I whip out my prayer rug everywhere right now, okay? With the state of the country currently.
What do you mean?
I don't know, I'm kind of digging it as an innuendo. Whip out my Persian prayer rug 5 times a day.
He said that there's so many prayer rugs. It's unreal. I think that's the exact quote, is this unreal? Where, you know, it's literally unreal because there's actually no factual evidence that there are rugs at the border. He was saying that there's duct tape being seen at the border. First he says duct tape, then he says it's like blue electrical tape. So he can't get his lies straight.
What is the Muslim significance of duct tape?
Well, he's saying that the tape is wrapping up women and they're all being duct taped and being smuggled across the border. So Rachel Maddow this week was talking about how a lot of what he's saying is very similar to the movie Sicario.
Sicario.
So maybe he watched this 2015 film and was like, oh, wait, that sounds like real life, which is kind of the ultimate creep, I think.
I mean, and also duct tape, but...
Also duct tape.
It's just terrifying to me as an Iranian. I mean, a lot of people, it's new to them. This is destabilization. Welcome. It feels like this.
Yeah.
And this is shit that would happen. Like, is this kind of misinformation, just so long as they have footage that they can connect it to?
Well, and the media is playing into it, right? Because they're just taking his quotes and making it the headline without saying, like, well, actually, that's a lie. And people are just reading the headlines. And I mean, we're in the School of Communications. Y'all should be fixing this.
What's up, grads? You got some work to do. And that usually closes out our segment.
Yeah, I think that's our show.
Yeah, we're going to pitch it over to Taz and Zara in the studio in the future.
In the future.
And we're back.
Back from the past.
Zara, what is your awkward ask a Muslim?
I love that we had the opportunity to time travel, and we did it not to stop Hitler or Trump, but just to find out our awkward ask a Muslim. I've got an awkward ask a Muslim for you, Taz.
Yeah.
All right. So yesterday I performed for Mona Sheikh's awesome weekly show in Irvine, Minority Reports.
Irvine. I'm just going to highlight Irvine there.
For those of you who don't know, Irvine is a suburb of Orange County.
And technically Irvine is a city in South Orange County. But it's like people who are in Irvine like to say that they're a suburb of Los Angeles, but it's like 80 miles away from Los Angeles. So it's not a suburb. It's just, you know, South Orange County.
Ooh.
Burn. Yeah, I said it.
So I'm performing this. Okay, so every week she has like a different kind of lineup. She had like the all Daisy lineup. Next week she's going to have the all Arab comedian women lineup. And this week she had all Persian comedian.
That's cool.
Women lineup. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Are there enough Persian women comedians for this to happen?
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly yes or exactly no?
Exactly are there. And the answer was yes. Like, we have a collection. We have enough Persian women in the Los Angeles area who have come together to perform.
Did you know these women before last night?
I only knew one of them.
Last night,
I only knew one of them, my girl, Sarah Fatemi, who is doing assistant work for me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Awesome.
Then that's it. Everyone else I got to meet for the very first
time.
That's
exciting for you.
It's so exciting.
Because I feel like you've talked about this often, about how you felt alone in this field.
Yeah. And well, in addition to that, one of the things that happens that makes it really hard to put together showcases like this is when you're performing at bars, you constantly have to establish context in order for you to do your jokes, right?
Totally.
So then what happens is most of your jokes end up being about where you're from because you only have 5 minutes at a time.
Which is so annoying because who wants to hear comedy about where people are from?
White people. Right. White people. So when you're in an all lineup of like mostly white guys and then you have like different people of color from different.
Can you imagine if white guys did a comedy set where they all had to talk about where they were from constantly? My parents were from the Mayflower.
My name is Doug. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, I like cheese.
I love cheese.
It would be so boring.
Yeah.
This is how I feel when I see brown comedians in white spaces. Because I'm just like, okay, get over it.
I know, because it's like, we heard where you're from. We got it. But you never get to hear beyond that.
You never get to.
Because they also don't get time to be able to find their material beyond that.
For sure.
And then to add insult to injury, even when you have different people of color in a bar setting, right, workshopping their stand-up, each of them still has to say where they're from.
Yeah.
Nobody gets to just move past the fact that, like, we're all from someplace.
So what was the awkward ask?
You know, connected to that is the benefit of these shows is that you get to find nuances, right? Like, performing for an all-woman Persian crowd means that I don't have to figure out what the audience is thinking and feeling in relationship to the dynamic of men and women in the room. I get to understand how the crowd is reacting just as Persian women.
Okay.
Just as like Persian women who are like my mom's age.
Okay. So what's your awkward ask?
So when I get up on stage, I say the salavat.
Uh-huh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Because I grew up as a kid hearing it.
Yeah.
And I always associated it with a Shia announcement.
Right. And you thought that since this was a Persian show with a largely Persian audience.
Largely Persian Muslim audience specifically. Right. That it would just, you know, it would be like, oh, yay.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Like a religious shout out as Shias. We never do that.
Yeah.
How entertaining. Nope.
Dead silence.
Dead silence.
No one responded.
One woman really
excitedly. So it was like one voice in the crowd.
One. And the way she responded was almost like if she was, this is going to sound blasphemous, you guys, but bear with me, I'm a good Muslim. It almost sounded like if you were in a crowd of conservatives and the one person who liked your dick joke was like, yeah, I got you, girl.
Oh.
And I was like, what the hell is happening?
That's interesting.
So I did it again, like thinking like, oh, maybe everyone's touchy because they don't know if like, you know, because Persians are not all Muslim, especially in LA. Like there's Persian Jews, Persian Baha'i, Persian, you know, Muslim, Persian atheists, like all over the place. Right. So I did it again to see like, where are the Muslims at? Dead silence.
Was it like dead silence, like steely dead silence?
Steely dead silence.
Like people, you could tell that people were like all of a sudden not laughing anymore. Like they were just
not only were they not laughing, they were scowling.
Scowling.
They were pissed.
Oh.
And I, like, in stand-up, you only have seconds.
Yeah, did it stop your comedy? Like, did it just, like, record scratch your comedy?
Oh, yeah, it fucked me up. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh,
I was like, what happened? Because I was like, you know, I know the demographic here.
Totally.
And I was just, like, befuddled. And it was one of those things where it's like, you throw in crowd testing stuff like that in the middle of your set. After you've established yourself, you've established a relationship with your audience. You throw in your sure thing at the top of your set.
Yeah.
So you got the crowd.
Yeah.
That was my sure thing.
Oh, no.
So I had no idea, like, what to do next. So, I maneuvered and I did my thing. But it stuck with me. And afterwards, I asked a woman about it. And she said, the woman who was, like, cheering. And she was like, oh, God, these guys. And I was like, what do you mean? And she explained to me that a lot of people associate that saying still specifically with Khomeini.
Oh my gosh. So it was like you were the arm of Khomeini.
Whoa. No.
But that's what they were thinking, right? Like that was, they had that association. They were like, nope, nope, nope.
Tess, I'm trying to be an Iranian in this country. What are you doing to me?
Like, hey, I didn't tell that joke.
Like politics as Iranians is like so tense and taut.
Right.
And I had no idea that this thing that I just grew up around hearing as a kid.
Well, how would this joke have landed in the Bay Area?
I mean, they would have just ignored me and moved forward.
Oh, I see. So over here is like just more tense.
Yeah, because I think what the woman explained to me was that there's actually been a lot of surveillance activity in Orange County.
Obviously.
And that they are seeking out these folks that they can associate with, like, you know, all these other different revolutionary arms and sympathizers.
Yep. COINTELPRO strategies.
Whew. Man, it was tense in that room.
Well, that sounds very awkward.
It was pretty awkward, man. It was pretty awkward. And I was like, holy shit, the stuff you got to know as a Persian Muslim woman in comedy, okay?
You know what I thought was really funny about this story is that you, of all people, are like such a huge conspiracy theorist. And even you didn't predict this. Like,
nope.
This, like, you were just like, oh, this is fine. You're like, what? There's surveillance in a Muslim community? I was like,
I mean, no, I know there's surveillance.
Right, right. But like how it affected your comedy, you just didn't expect it.
I didn't realize it was to the point where people couldn't even laugh in association.
Totally.
And then I understood after she explained that to me, then I understood the scowls because then they felt like I put them on the spot.
Yeah.
To choose between religion
or like
safety.
And like who's in the audience watching me laugh at what jokes.
Exactly. Religion and safety.
Woo.
Man.
Awkward.
Opening joke. Woo.
And on that note, we got to end the show. It's the end of our time here.
Happy 50th anniversary, Tess.
Happy 50th anniversary. Show us some love by making some donations on our website. Also, subscribe and like comment, make comments on the iTunes page. Give us stars, give us reviews. We want to see the love on social so that we can continue to get people to listen to us.
Be a subscriber.
And see you in Yale. See you in Toronto. See you
in the future.
In the future.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian American and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives.
Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with the Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more at bconline.org. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy Potluck. Potluck. Can we insert like a future sound effect that's like choo, 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 choo. Fine, I'll just do it into the microphone.
No, don't do that. Just because we say no doesn't mean you get to sound effect with your mouth.